Jeff, let's kind of start out on the negative side here and say that something went badly wrong in this flight. How would you defend your actions?
I would have to defend, if I was that pilot sitting on the right, I'd have to defend my actions saying it seemed like a perfectly reasonable thing to do at the time, and I miscalculated my ability to handle the situation, which is really no different, in my opinion, than my launching into instrument conditions or taking a flight on a windy day or anything else we do as a pilot where I say, I feel this is within my abilities and things got out of hand and something happened and it required me to deal with it or declare an emergency or whatever it is. I made a mistake and then I did something to fix it. And I have to take the heat for that. That's a real risk that you would have in this situation.
Follow-up question. Would you, as this pilot, intentionally go out and just fly a flight from the right seat if there was nobody in the left seat, just for the heck of it, because you could?
It's a good question. Maybe. Or maybe have a reasonable reason, because I'd want a reason for doing it. So he's thinking about, you know, becoming an instructor. He wants to fly from the right seat. Has someone sit in the left seat who's a instrument pilot or even a far-long instrument student, says, hey, I just want you to watch while I do this. You're there as a little bit of a safety net, and fly from the right seat. Is that careless and reckless? I don't think so if he's capable of doing it.
Well, Jeff, in your explanation and in your expert response, I think you make some points that are against your choice in this case. Frankly, I probably wouldn't be inclined to want to do this if I were that pilot. But you talk about being instantly able to take over and recover from unusual attitudes and establishing excellent communication things. All of these things, I think, are adding a lot of risk to this flight. And a non-instructor pilot who has no experience for this is really not in a good position to be out there in actual IFR, low IFR conditions in that case, in my view anyway.
I would agree with you, Wally. I think this pilot has rocks in his head if he's going to attempt this, quite frankly. He has no training flying IFR from the right seat. It is much different. And he's undertaking a task which is going to require him to salvage the situation if things go bad. And I don't think he's prepared for it. He hasn't had any training of this sort, and he's just asking for problems.
And you asked the question, how would this be different than just flying from the right seat and putting, you know, a sandbag in the left seat, if you will. And I think the whole thing that would make the difference there is what's the weather. If it was good VFR weather, I think it would be perfectly reasonable to put a hood on and go fly around from the right seat if you wanted to, you know, see what it's like. But with a hood on as opposed to actual conditions is a huge world of difference. You just don't have that flip up the hood and get the safety net back.
So let me put this out there and ask how people feel about it. Let's go 2 days into the future. He's passed his check ride. He has exactly one more flight in that airplane than before. And now he's like, it's a low IMC day. Hey, I want to go fly. Will you come sit right seat next to me and look over my shoulder because I'm still new at this? And suddenly that's 100% acceptable?
It's legal.
This is legal. Yeah. They're both legal. So what I'm saying is the reason I bring it up is I feel like we make this arbitrary line like you didn't have your instrument rating. You're going to kill us all. Oh, you got your instrument rating. We're great. It's just not that cut and dry as we all know. So that's why I put it back out there as a challenge. This person is, first of all, they're very unlikely to screw up at all.
Well,
so really what you're talking, you got to realize, right, they're just pre-check ride. They may screw up. We have to be prepared for that. But this isn't like letting, you know, your first cousin who's done some flight simulator at home take over and fly the airplane. So you really do have an expectation, which could be a problem, but you have an expectation. This person is going to be capable of doing that. It's not even your opinion. It's his instructor's opinion. He's ready for a check ride. So when you think about what you're probably going to need to do is to be able to say, okay, I'm watching what's going on, and I'm not going to give you really any latitude, and then I'm going to take it. So I'm going to take it. Can I fly from the right seat? You've done it before. Haven't done it in instrument conditions. So granted, there's a risk there. But if you as the pilot feel comfortable with that, you feel comfortable with the risk to your ticket, you feel comfortable with the idea of flying from the right seat, being able to take the airplane, fly a missed approach, level out, and then fly an approach yourself from the right to get us home. Well, I don't think that there's this catastrophic pit. I don't think you have rocks in your head. I think you're taking more risk than a lot of people would be willing to do, but I don't see you as being crazy.
Well, allegedly, this pilot is ready for his check ride, allegedly. Who's to judge that? This pilot is going to fly from the right seat? I've seen any number of people, and I'm sure you have, Wally, who are allegedly ready for their check ride, and they get sent back for rework.
That's right.
And the difference is that they've not been evaluated by an examiner.
Right.
I think that's a key hurdle to pass.
And the other assumption is that you're not going to give him any latitude, this pre-check ride pilot. And the assumption is that you can make that judgment when the latitude is going to be exceeded, because things happen in a dynamic fashion. You have to learn, if you're an instrument instructor, how to judge when things are going off the rails. And I don't know that this fellow's got that skill yet.
And I think that's one of the things that differentiates an instructor from a pilot. It's not you pass the PTS for instructing or you learned about the hazardous attitudes. It's about anticipation and seeing what's going on and watching something take place that you feel is going to happen. You don't want to wait until something does happen before realizing that's going to happen. Not in the IFR situation, but I had a situation some years ago, a power on stall. And my student was a very good student, but I could look at his face and see the level of concentration, and I just knew somehow that when that stall broke, he was not going to release the right rudder. And sure enough, bang, we went right over into a spin. But I decided to let that take place, knowing it was going to. And I think that's the difference. If your friend in this scenario screws up and causes a problem, are you going to see it quickly enough to be able to react to it?
And I would say if he doesn't have rocks in his head, he's certainly biting off more than he can chew here, taking on this responsibility.
I think the roles are key to this. And could it work? I believe, Jeffy, it absolutely could work, okay? But the personalities are very, very relevant to this case. And that's why I think it's a good case study, because this could work very, very well, you know, for two people. We all know people in the industry that are not flight instructors that certainly could be, okay? So does that little piece of paper make the difference? And we all know people that have gone through the procedure and have been designated CFIs that are not capable of flight instruction. So, you know, we can talk about, you know, the piece of paper and all that kind of thing. So this could work, you know, and you are buddies, you know, and you understand each other and you're comfortable together. And so you got all that going for you. If you appropriately brief ahead of time with regard to who is the pilot in command, how we will handle exchanges, all those things can be worked through. So could this work? Absolutely. I believe it could work. Once again, it really takes, you know, it's not just a snap judgment, though. Hey, listen, you know, this isn't working out. You have, you know, this is a lot of bad luck. So, yeah, let's go ahead and do it. Not to be taken lightly. You know, really an in-depth analysis of the risks. What are the risks? What are the downsides? And I think, especially for the person in the right seat, knowing what you don't know. Because once again, a seasoned guy from the right seat that absolutely understands is one with the airplane, you know, isn't going to let the situation deteriorate to the point. But how far do you let someone go? When do you take the airplane away from your buddy? And we've all seen that, you know, with regard to it goes too far. And let's not, deny for a second that this scenario happens day in and day out. We have people that are not flight instructors going out with their buddies and doing, you know, just the kind of thing we're talking about here. So the analysis of this event, I think, is very, very important. And I think we need, as pilots, we need to recognize the key elements to this. And so that's why I think this is a very good discussion. Doesn't work for everybody, but could work for the right personalities.
So anyhow, two things that I want to bring up. One is I'm not sure how much of a service you would be doing to your friend here also, just because you took off and flew to some airport and flew an instrument approach and flew back home and nobody died doesn't necessarily mean that he was objectively evaluated to the same standards that he would be required to on a practical test. He may have satisfied your requirements for 110 feet, but there's a lot more to a practical test than just maintaining 110 feet. Would this be really doing a service if it was a sloppy flight, but it did okay? Now he's got the impression, hey, I can fly in the clouds. I managed to get from point A to point B. I think where you could actually do more of a service would be in good VFR conditions, conducting like a mock practical test. You know what the examiner is going to do. You're going to go out and you're going to fly the three approaches and, you know, all this stuff. Put a hood on them and say, okay, I'm going to sit here as the instructor or as the examiner, actually, and this is what you're going to do. We're going to sit down before this flight. We're going to look through the PTS because I'm an instrument pilot, but it was like 10 years ago when I took it, and I haven't looked at the PTS since. So together we can go through the PTS. I'll kind of help you a little bit prepare for this so you know what to expect. I'm not going to correct you if you get beyond the tolerances, and you will know right away whether you're beyond the tolerances. I think there's more value to be gained for the student or the prospective applicant that way than giving them a false sense of confidence by managing to fly this thing and not kill anybody.
I don't disagree at all about the mock check ride being potentially valuable. I think it's irrelevant to this particular situation because you can't go for a mock check ride that day. Your buddy's situation
but
here.
But tomorrow you may be able to, and I think you could provide more value to him by doing that than putting him on a than taking him on a flight that's going to instill a false sense of confidence.
I don't think that would instill a false sense of confidence at all. I think, well, you know, if he was able to do a flight.
Okay.
And if he was able to do a flight, go through the entire flight, you never took over, and it was an actual day. Oh, my Lord. What an amazing amount of confidence that would give you going into your check ride in a very real way. Your skills have gelled together. This isn't about you teaching him anything.
No.
He just wants to go fly, keep the juices running, make sure he remembers what all the buttons are and all that kind of stuff.
But it could be a very sloppy flight. He doesn't check the nav aid identifiers. You know, it misses all that stuff.
Not your problem. It's not your problem in terms of whether he passes his check right. You're there as a safety net on that. You are not an instructor on the flight. So
right.
If he doesn't check a nav aid and you have to say, hey,
You are pilot in command.
Wait, and right. You don't change the situation here. If you have to reach over and push the button, and so I'm PIC, I need to check and make sure we're actually receiving a localizer, okay, I got it. And your buddy then doesn't do it on the check ride, that's not your problem. It was your responsibility on that flight, but you weren't there to teach him
do anything. But he goes on that flight. He doesn't check the nav aid, okay? You don't catch it because you're not attuned to that kind of stuff where an experienced instructor would be looking for that in the approach setup. So now he's ingrained a sloppy habit where he doesn't have to check. I don't think you're doing him a service.
And I don't really understand what this whole thing is about because this individual is allegedly ready for his check ride. That would mean he's been signed out by his instructor. Those endorsements are good for 60 days. What's the problem here? Either he's ready for the check ride or he's not. Why does he need this additional work? And if he does feel that way, then he reschedules the check ride and gets the
practice. I don't think it's additional work. He's keyed up for his check ride, right? But now he's got to wait because the examiner is not available. He's like, I just want to go fly, right? In order to make sure things are going. You understand that need, I would think. That you would say, I'm ready. I could wait 3 days and do
well,
it.
This,
I'd still be ready,
I do
but
understand
I want to go fly.
This could be a type A student who wants to drive forward. But you're the guy that's got to make the decision whether you do it or not as the person who's going to sit in the right seat.
You know, but I think we're mixing some apples and oranges here. You know, some of us are trying to make it an instructional ride, which it is not necessarily an instructional ride. But I think Jeff's point about, you know, where you are acting as pilot in command from the left seat, you fly this thing as if I'm not here. I am here as your safety pilot, but I am the pilot in command. So let's make it very clear right now. If at any point you begin to approach an area that makes me remotely uncomfortable, You know, I am going to intercede, okay? So if you would like to fly this flight, you know, as if it's yours, I am not an instructor. And you need to make that very clear, because you try to play instructor, you know, just because you stayed at a Holiday Inn last night, you know, it's not going to work.
In my pre-instructor days, all the pilots I listened to tell stories about their flying. I thought they must really be good pilots. And I assumed those pilots just flew perfectly. And then I became a flight instructor, and I realized not all of those pilots flew as good as they said, and I got surprised by some very experienced pilots, by the way. And then I became an instrument instructor, and guess what? All those instrument pilots that I used to listen to also showed me some very big mistakes. And I think instructor training at least helps prepare a pilot to handle this, the very situations you discussed, Jeff, that could come up in this case, the communication, the takeover, the unusual attitude. And instructor training in part prepares you for that, but instructor experience prepares you way a lot better. Now, this whole table here is a group of instrument instructors, and we've all had a variety of experiences that have brought our levels of attention up. I'm familiar with a fellow that I certified as a brand new instrument instructor. He chose as one of his first assignments to take a private pilot out for instrument training on a 200-and-a-half day. At White Plains, New York, they crashed coming back in, and they were both killed. In my view, that was a case of an inexperienced instrument instructor getting in over his head with an inexperienced pilot.
Well, to that point, you know, let's suppose this guy was a brand new instrument instructor. Would you say to someone like that, I've got a great first flight for you. This guy is ready for his check ride. You're basically going to sit there and watch over him with no experience like that. Would any of us say that, oh, no, there's no way that low-time instructor, should sit right seat, you know, with a pilot who is already done half of his check ride?
I might.
You might?
I might. And the reason is, and we haven't really talked about this a lot in the discussion, but I'm particularly bothered by the lack of right seat experience in the clouds, in actual conditions. One thing I found early on when I had my first right seat experience in the clouds was that the view out the left side window of things moving by, those just changes from light gray to dark gray to white to whatever, was very, very vertigo-inducing. And it took a real effort to focus in on the instruments and disregard that. Now, we kind of get used to that during training. You know, we get maybe a little bit of a look under the hood on the left side, and if we get into actual, we can see the clouds going by on the right. But change that to the mirror image, and you have this sudden sensation of a continuous left turn. And even for the newly minted instrument instructor who hasn't spent a lot of time in the right seat in actual instrument conditions, it can be very disconcerting. And I don't think this pilot in the scenario really understands that.
We talked, one of the options was that this situation is careless and or reckless. Any takers on whether that leaps out as a, yeah, this is definitely careless and or reckless?
It's not careless and reckless unless they find out about it, right?
It's
not careless and reckless until something happens here, right. Which is definitely – there's definitely potential for it.
But as we said, the gentleman in this scenario can legally go out to his airplane, get in the right seat of the airplane, take off, you know, and fly exactly – the scenario that we're doing. Having another person along, is that better or worse? I mean, you got two pilots instead of one. Does that make it worse? Well, how they play their roles, it could, but does it necessarily? I mean, does it add risk? That's, you know, obviously there's some uncertainty here, and that's what we're trying to deal with. How do we quantify that uncertainty? And that's the challenge.
Well, to manage risk, you need a certain element of certainty. And what we've got is uncertainty. So I don't know how we're going to manage this risk. That's what puzzles me here.
Well, Jeff, the scenario is great because I think you've probably set up a scenario that are the best of conditions that could be. And I think you during your response to it, you discussed certainly how to handle those. And Bob made the point, it's probably happening a lot around the countryside. And I think in your case, it's the best case scenario. In many cases, I think the conditions are significantly worse than this, and that's clearly not safe.
We don't hear a whole lot about why this was a loss of separation or an accident due to it was a non-rated pilot in the left seat with his buddy being PIC in the right. Like, planes aren't falling out of the sky all over the place because this is happening. So if it is happening a lot of times it's happening with no repercussions at all. Now, that's just a supposition on my part. But I think one of the things that on one side of the equation we can be in the danger of is saying, well, we're instrument instructors, so clearly nobody else can handle this. And you know what? It may be that it's got issues, it's difficult, but it's not rocket science. It's not impossible. And you're right, we did set up the scenario to be as good as possible. And I did say, I'm even on the line with that. If it was round gauges rather than a glass panel, for me, that might sway it over the edge. If he had never flown an approach from the right seat, yeah, you've never, ever done it before. So we moved it in those directions. It also was 500 to 700, not 200.5. 500 to 700 and 2 miles. So there are plenty of things that could push it over the line one way, and only each pair of people, I think, has to decide where's the risk for them. But I think you can look at that and say, yeah, we can mitigate our risk based on what our experience is, what we're bringing to this, how we deal with this situation.